Our First Testament lesson this morning, for those of you who like to follow along, may be found in your pew Bibles at page 24, 24 Old Testament. And the reading is from Genesis chapter 27, a continuation of the reading that was done last Sunday. Genesis 27, verses 30 through 40. Listen for the word of the Lord. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of his father Isaac, his brother Esau came in from his hunting. He also prepared savory food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father sit up and eat of his son's game so that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" And he answered, "I am your firstborn son, Esau." Then Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate it all before you came, and I have blessed him? Yes, and blessed he shall be." When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me also, father." But Isaac said, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and look, now he has taken away my blessing." And then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered Esau, "I have already made him your lord, and I have given him all his brothers as servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you only one blessing, father? Bless me also, father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then his father Isaac answered him, "See, away from the fatness of the earth shall your home be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you break loose, you shall break his yoke from your neck." The word of the Lord.
Our gospel reading this morning comes from Matthew's gospel, the 20th chapter, verses 1 through 16. Jesus said, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right.' So they went. And when he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, 'Why are you standing here idle all day?' They said to him, 'Because no one has hired us.' He said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, 'Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first.' When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now, when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, 'These last worked only an hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat.' But he replied to one of them, 'Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what is mine? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the first will be last, and the last will be first. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The kingdom of heaven is like this. Jane is starting up a new tech company, totally out of her garage, Steve Jobs style. But she wants to hire a team to work with. She's not really the go-it-alone type, and any good startup needs a variety of talents to make it work. So she recruits some smart and energetic recent college grads. They all agree on a compensation package, nothing extravagant, but certainly enough to live on. Their agreement also includes a guarantee that when the company goes public in 3 years, each of them will receive a $100,000 bonus. These promising young people are ready to start their careers, to prove themselves, to work their way up in the world. The idea for the company seems promising, and the compensation is comparable to what their peers are finding elsewhere. So they sign on and get to work. A year later, there have been some bumps in the road, and the work is getting harder. Jane's gotten a great deal on some office space in a hip yet still seedy part of Detroit, and there's more work to do than they can possibly keep up with, especially if they want to go public in 2 years. But the workers Jane hired stick with it, so Jane decides to add a few more people to the team to help share the load. She explains to the new team members that they'll be paid enough to live on. She also tells them that they're hoping to go public in 2 years, and if they do, she'll give them a fair bonus for their contribution. Another year in, the company has had its ups and downs, but now has 3 floors of office space in Troy, and development is really going places. Everyone's working crazy long hours, and it feels like they may be close to breaking out. In this hopeful spirit, Jane once again brings more people on board. The new hires understand that if the company goes public, they'll be compensated fairly, but no specifics are discussed. Things go well enough that this whole hiring scenario is repeated again a couple of months later. By the end of the year, things are looking much less optimistic. They haven't really found a market for their product, their expenses have ballooned, and their investors are running for the door. They've got just a little capital left to make one last push to try to make a go of this thing before the sun sets on this whole enterprise. Jane goes out once more to try to bring a few more people on board. But as you can imagine, it's hard to find people who want to come to work on a sinking ship. But one of the company's first employees connects Jane with some friends of his from college who've been looking for work since graduation. He assures Jane that they were all just as smart and energetic and motivated, but the job market has just been really lousy the last few years, especially for people with no experience. Their resumes are great, they interviewed well, they're skilled and well-educated and ready to work, but they just haven't gotten picked up yet. They might just be desperate enough to help Jane with the 11th-hour push to make things work. She makes them no promises, but tells them there's work to do if they want to do it. Going off the logic that it's easier to look for a job when you have a job, the last group of employees dives in and gets to work for that last month of the year. By some miracle of market forces, something clicks at the last minute, and the company goes crazy practically overnight. Within weeks, there are multiple buyout offers, the company goes public, and Jane's company is instantly worth billions. She calls her staff together to share the good news. Addressing the employees who've only been there a month, she thanks them for joining in the last-ditch effort and gives each of them a $100,000 bonus. They are thrilled and grateful, And everyone else starts getting really excited. If Jane is so lavishly generous with this last group to be hired, clearly the bonuses will only get bigger for those with a greater investment of time and loyalty and hard work. When Jane addresses those employees hired in the last couple of years, she thanks them for their dedication and service through good times and bad, and she gives each of them a $100,000 bonus. While those who've been with the company less than a year are happy to get such a grand bonus, there is grumbling from those who've been in the company longer. Didn't Mike deserve more for his innovation? Didn't Andrea deserve more for all the extra long hours she put in? Didn't Carrie deserve more for all of those brilliant ideas that saved the company more than once? Jane ignores their chatter and addresses the first employees of the company. Everyone is waiting with bated breath now. These are the people who first took a chance on Jane and her dream. These are the people with the most time and energy and talent invested in the company. They are all waiting. Excuse me. They are all waiting to see what lavish rewards Jane has in store for them. They're beginning. Excuse me. To interrupt my story. What's that? Commercial break, exactly. It's a Holy Spirit intervention. They're all plotting their first expenditures with this grand bonus they expect to receive. Maybe they'll take that trip to Italy that they'd always dreamed of but never had time or money for. Or perhaps they'll purchase a house in the fashionable part of Birmingham. Maybe they'll just blow it on something fun like that hot new Corvette. Or maybe they'll have enough money to start up a company of their own. Jane thanks these first employees for their loyalty and their hard work, and she gives each of them a $100,000 bonus. The room erupts in protest. Didn't they deserve more for taking risks, for working hard, for sticking with the company even when it looked like it was failing? How could they possibly get the same meager bonus as those slackers who'd only been working a month? Those people couldn't even get their act together to find a job for almost 3 years after graduation. And they get the same reward of those that were able to get a job right out of school. This is crazy. It's outrageous. It's unfair. Jane waits for them to quiet down and then asks them, "Isn't this what you agreed to work on? You knew what was promised?" Adam, one of the senior employees, speaks up. "You are giving them," he says, angrily pointing at the last group to be hired, "the same thing you are giving us. That's not right. It's not fair. They haven't been here as long. They haven't worked as hard. They haven't earned it." "Yeah," pipes up another of the long-timers. "We deserve more. We made this company what it is. We jumped at the opportunity even though it was risky. We took this company from nothing and made it a success. We're better than them," interjects another of the senior employees. "There, I said it, and you all know you think it's true. We got jobs right out of school instead of bumming around unemployed and living in our parents' basements for years. We worked long, hard hours when this company had no money, no office space even, and these latecomers walk into this cushy office with a fully staffed operation and act like they own the place. And now you want to make us all equals? Well, we're not. We're not equal." The room grows quiet, and no one's quite sure what to say. Even through the last difficult month, the room grows quiet, and no one's quite sure what to say. Even through the last difficult month, the employees had worked as a team, doing whatever needed to be done, helping each other out. They genuinely enjoyed working together, and They were proud of the work they'd done. Now, the senior employees felt exposed. Did they all secretly harbor feelings of superiority? And the newer employees felt ashamed. Had they really earned their bonuses in just a month? Jane took a deep breath. First, I'd like you all to remember that what we're talking about here, all of it is my money. It is my company. I started it. I invested in it. I kept it going. I hired all of you. And in the end, I made a lot of money. I can do whatever I want with what is mine. The only thing I am required to do in order to be fair, in order to be just, is to pay you what we agreed on. And I've done that, haven't I? She said, looking at the senior employees. Begrudgingly, they nodded. So then it's up to me if I want to be generous to others. None of you received your bonuses because of your hard work, loyalty, accomplishments, or seniority. None of you earned them. The first employees got a bonus because I chose to give you one, and you thought that was a fair deal when you were hired. The rest of you got a bonus because I choose to give you one now. It's my call. Are those of you who've been here longer really going to be jealous because of my generosity? The senior employees looked around. The bonus was radically unfair and perfectly just, all at the same time. It was unmerited and wildly generous. It didn't fit into any reasonable economic model. No capitalist reward for the quantity or quality of their work. No socialist taking from the rich to give to the poor. Maybe it was communist? They weren't sure. No one had gotten less than they'd bargained for. They all had plenty. Not enough, maybe, for fashionable neighborhoods and sports cars and risky investments. But they all had at least what they were planning on, and some had more than they ever could have hoped for. They all had enough. It wasn't about merit. It wasn't about equality, even. It didn't make any sense. Finally, someone spoke up. Why did you do it? Because it's who I am, Jane replied. I am just and I am gracious. These two parts of my character live in irreconcilable tension. My corporate economics demand an equality so radical it isn't fair, a generosity so expansive it isn't equal. It leaves no space for division or competition, winners and losers, superiority and shame. To work with me is to live in this tension, too. It's a tension that requires us to see the world through the lens of gratitude and sufficiency. Where we look for equity, we find generosity. Where we seek justice, we find grace. But that's not how the world works, piped up one employee. No, Jane replied. No, you're right. It's not. The kingdom of heaven is like this. Thanks be to God. Amen.